Finally, a talk show that helps you defeat mediocre Christianity and walk in genuine friendship with God. Coach and Joe starts right now.
Welcome to Coach and Joe. And as you can see, I have the illustrious Jonathan Helms here with me.
Greetings.
John Helms always wears shorts. Always. He knew he was going to be on a movie set today. What's funny is I texted Brian Fannin this morning. I said, Brian, I need some fig leaves. He's got fig tree in his garden.
Yeah.
Yard, you call it. We call it a garden. I think it's...
I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I'm willing to meet you halfway on that.
Yeah. Anyway, he's got some excellent figs. But I wanted a fig leaf. I was asking that question a few minutes ago. How big is a fig leaf? And Chris King says he's seen the biggest fig leaf that's ever existed.
Of course Chris King has, sure.
Chris King knows everything. If you ever need to know anything, Chris King, is your man. He reckons it's kind of like this kind of size, which obviously if you're looking for a covering, what am I talking about? Why am I talking about fig leaves? What is this? Where is this in the Bible?
It's in Genesis. After the sin, they were shame, they were hidden. They were making a covering for themselves. God was looking for them.
John, I mean, this is funny.
It is kind of, when you really think about it, they went and found, I guess, what was either the easiest leaf to sew or the biggest leaf they had. I'm not sure which.
I wonder if it's like, oh no, where's the nearest tree? And it just happened to be within reach was a fig tree. And they just grabbed the nearest leaves. It's like, okay, I need more than one. I need two.
I need a couple of them. That might have been when the first fight started. No, I need more. Like, give me, right?
So, yes. Chad yesterday spoke at church. Excellent sermon in our Grace series.
Game changer.
And he was talking about rigorous authenticity and a particular TED talk that he'd listened to by a guy called Michael Brody Waite. And this is a guy, Chad sent me the talk afterwards. He sent it to Bo Cable and a number of the business guys, because this guy was an addict and messed his life up for a number of years. I mean, his resume has a gap for 3 years where he was just, his whole goal was to get high all day and to stay that way till he collapsed at the end of the year. And then he went through a process that he was taken through, the 12-step AA process, and got free from that process. When I say got free, what I mean is every single day he does that process.
Right. He got free through the process.
Yes.
Not from process.
Yes.
Process brought his freedom.
Yes. And process is still his freedom.
Yeah. That's a big deal.
Because he's basically a successful leader right now, still operating off the same three principles he learned. So the three principles he learned: rigorous authenticity, surrender all the outcomes, and do the uncomfortable work. Mm-hmm. So those were his three things. But I think what I want to talk about today is rigorous authenticity. Because here's my observation. And this is what Chad was talking about yesterday. Like, do we do this as church? Do we do rigorous authenticity? Where in life do we do rigorous authenticity?
I'm not sure we do it anywhere. I'm literally not sure we do it anywhere. Where most families don't do it. They really don't. Most marriages don't do it. Not well. I think sometimes we get idealistic about whether it's being done or not. But in my various years of ministry, in ministry experiences, I was telling my wife this morning, I've worked at four churches and two other parachurches in ministry. So I've been on six different ministry teams, and I've never seen anything that looked like rigorous authenticity or vulnerability, specifically until I got here. And oddly enough, the two places that came the closest to it were the parachurch ministries. Mm-hmm. So somehow, somewhere, the church has run from it in a really significant way. I mean, to where it doesn't even look anything like it.
And I want to take this story right back to that fig leaf incident because, let's go back to the beginning. Adam messed up. The first thing he did in being messed up was go and hide.
Mm-hmm.
And the father comes looking for him, says, "Where are you?" You know, I don't think that was the father kind of going, "I'm not really sure where Adam is. Any of you angels seen him?" You know, that kind of thing.
Right.
There's something of the father, even in that question, saying, "Adam, where are you? What's going on right now? Because I thought we were in relationship and something's shifted right now because you've gone into hiding and you weren't there before." And he'd created them naked.
Right.
Which is kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it is a little bit of an odd idea. But I think what's funny about it is when I think about it, I kind of get the idea that God may have chuckled just a bit when they stepped out and they were wearing what they were wearing. You know, because I envision like if I was a kid, like with my kids, like when Bonnie dresses herself. By the way, Bonnie's unbelievable and she loves fashion. And to her, fashion is multiple textures, multiple layers, multiple colors, and none of it goes together. Because she wants you to see every single piece.
Yeah.
And so I have a feeling like they kind of stepped out. Probably not the way she does, like, "Hey, Daddy, look at me." But more of like sheepishly, but he probably was like, "Oh, bless your hearts." Right? Like, because it was inefficient. It was unnecessary. He knew what had happened. And I know there's a greater weight to the fall of man. But there's also this weird tenderness. Like we saw it in God yesterday when Chad was talking about how God said, "I'm not going with you, Moses," in the sermon he mentioned. Like, "I'm not going to go with you because on the journey, I actually might kill you."
Right.
And Moses is like, "If you're not going, I'm not going.
Yeah.
I don't want that. I don't want that."
Yeah.
But then God's like, "Okay, I'll go." Because there was this weird, God can't help himself.
Yeah.
And so I feel like there was this little bit of a, "Oh, bless your heart."
He's so relational. He's so wanting us to connect to him. I mean, even that standing there naked, it's like, let's not have any barrier in any way.
Right. God, what a great idea, though, if you think about it. No barriers, Andy.
Yeah. And the amazing thing about it in this TED talk that Michael Brody Waite talks about is actually, how do we practice these things? The reality for me, trying to survive the world is at school, how do I find my place? How do I find my standing? My strategy was, I captain the rugby team. Now, I know you guys have softened it and put pads on and all that kind of stuff. You call it football. But
I'll show you later.
Yeah. But being, we'll talk about it later, but being in that place of position where, you know, I'm performing, people get to see me in a role, and then people go, "Oh, well, he's the captain of the rugby team. He must be cool." That kind of thing. I'm trying to earn my status. That's what we're given in life. It's earn your place. Try and climb up the ladder. Try and impress. You know, receive the accolades, and then that will give you significance.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, there's something in this journey that Michael was describing. You know, he set up this company. It was doing really well. It got into 5 different hospitals that he was working in. He just got given 100 hospitals. But just before that happened, one thing went wrong in his data. And he was like, "What do I do here?" And he was sponsoring someone else at that point. And the advice he was giving to the person he was sponsoring was, you need to be completely, radically, rigorously authentic and vulnerable. And he knew in that moment, I can't cover up this fault in my software right now, just before we secure 100 hospitals for my company.
The big risk, right.
So he literally rings the woman in charge and says, I've just got to be honest with you. We found a fault. It's not hurt anyone's health, but there's one person that actually in the data, there's an error in the software. And he said he was at the other end of this phone and she started laughing at the other end. And he was kind of a little bit offended. He was thinking, oh no, I've definitely lost the contract, all this stuff. But she started laughing. She said, "Listen, Michael, normally when I'm having this conversation with someone, there are 20,000 people where the error is. You're telling me about the one. This makes me trust you more. Have the contract for 100 hospitals. Because I know that you'll be honest with me. If you're going to be honest with me about the one, you'll be honest with me. And we can really build and grow together. There's something about that authenticity that he then built his whole company on. What, talk to me about this, Helms, because the world tells us to hide. The world tells us to put a mask on, to be something that we're not, to try and wangle our way through life. And yet what I'm seeing all the time is this cry of, if only people would be real, then we could start properly relating.
So it's interesting, the whole time you were talking, I just kept thinking, there's a phrase I use a lot in counseling sessions where I talk about trust the truth, which is what it is. It's an invitation to this authenticity you're talking about. Because what happens is we make a lot of presumptions about what's going to happen, and then we protect ourselves from those presumptions by trying to create an ulterior plan.
Yeah.
Right? Adam and Eve presumed God would be as embarrassed about their nakedness as they were.
Yeah.
That's really what that was about.
Yeah.
Because they had already seen each other, and they were ashamed. They presumed he would be too.
Yeah.
Which is illustrating that they really didn't know him as well as they could have, should have,
yeah,
and wanted to, that they didn't know his heart, that he was okay with that. But there's this element of, I need to trust the truth, because if I can't trust the truth, then I'm really not free on any level, because I'm actually captive to all the presumptions that I'm making.
Yeah.
And it actually keeps you on your toes. So when he threw that out there, I didn't know the story because I haven't watched his TED Talk or read his book yet. But when he threw that out there and then she was invitational, what he learned was not only did she trust him, but he learned that he can further trust the truth.
Yeah.
So he got grounded in it to keep practicing that.
Yeah.
And it was just one, it sounds like a big risk. And I guess it kind of is a big risk. It's a lot of contracts.
The truth will set you free.
But the truth will set you free, because he learned that when he was honest about his alcoholism or whatever drug use he was doing, that he got free there.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't truth work again?
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand that truth is repeatable and never fails.
Why do we cover up?
I don't know, man. There's so many lies. We've believed dozens of lies. I think that's a reality. We've believed, I think the more we do that belief of the lies around us with the shame bit, I think we actually start to believe that we have a better plan.
Yeah.
It really is amazing how many people we have conversations with that are committed to their own reasoning and their own thought process. Like they're the ones that have come through with a better plan.
What I hear you saying
the Lord.
Is we're trying to save ourselves.
We're trying to save ourselves. Really, so much of what we do in this realm of not being honest and authentic has to do with self-preservation.
So yesterday I watched Brandon Vincent get up on the stage at Bridgeway. Former alcoholic, continues to go to AA meetings, passionate to see people free because he's got free by sticking with the process. There's something in that rigorous authenticity of him standing up there and saying, I had to go on a process, because what one of the things he said, and I want to talk to you about this because this has been 11 years at least of your experience.
Mm-hmm.
He got free when he stopped thinking that he could fix it himself. He got to an end of himself and realizing, I can't save myself. And then he checked into an AA meeting where he began to find others who he could come into community with who'd also realized the same thing. And, you know, you've seen, because just talk to me about your previous job, what that looked like, you know, the success stories you saw, the failures that were in front of you. How does someone get free? How does someone get free?
So for almost 12 years, I worked at Miracle Hill Ministries, which is here in Greenville, South Carolina, and it's the largest provider of homeless and addiction services in the state of South Carolina. And what we would do was we would house homeless folks in one facility, but we'd also do recovery in a different facility. But everything was matched together very much a lot. There was a lot of overlap between people being stuck on the street and people dealing with addictions and wanting to get set free. And one of the things that's really real about the whole problem of homelessness that nobody realizes, I don't think, I didn't know it until I got in there, to be honest, and started paying attention. They think it's a mental health problem. They think it's a finance problem. They think it's an addiction problem. They think it's an education problem, an occupation, like, and all those things are true. Homelessness is a relationship problem. And the reason those relationships have fallen apart was there was no authenticity in the relationships that existed. Right? Like, sometimes circumstances can speak to it. People would have tragedies and lose their entire family. But those are rare. What we watched was people burning bridges for years, sometimes decades, out of inauthentic relationships, in an ability to tell the truth. And so what we would do was, when we would get them in the shelter, my literal goal when I would meet with a guy was to teach him how to tell the truth. And really, if he could start telling me the truth before he even told himself or the Lord truth, then we knew we had a chance to get him to be honest with the Lord and honest with himself. And the guys that couldn't do that couldn't get out.
Yeah.
They would cycle back through homelessness and cycle back through homelessness and cycle back through addiction. And I do think it's really interesting, because even going back to the Eden story, I think it's really interesting that these events are essentially driven out of crisis. Mm-hmm. But we do so much to avoid crisis, rather than embrace the crisis that's on us. Mm-hmm. Like, it's going to happen. We live in a broken world. Events are going to come to me and you, even as passive recipients, just in a world of brokenness, things are going to happen, mm-hmm. right? Going to have car wrecks. People are going to get sick. My daughter was born with Bonnie, the one I mentioned earlier, was born with a condition where she had a 50-50 life expectancy in the womb. That's a crisis.
Yeah.
And so they're going to happen. And failure to recognize that crisis puts us in a situation of dependence is a huge problem. We still try to work our way out. We're not dependent. We become even more resolved to solve our own problem.
Yeah.
And I watch the danger of that. It's really an idolatry of self.
Yeah.
If you really want to get down to the bare bones of what's going on in our heart and in the yeah. spirit.
Yeah. We don't, we've learned and we've been trained not to depend on others.
100%, especially in America.
To depend on ourselves as this individualistic mindset that we've got. We can't trust others.
That and it's one of the ditches of our core value of individual and indivisible.
Yeah.
You can't just live in the individual.
Yeah.
You lose the benefit of the indivisible, and also the indivisible group. The church misses you.
Yeah.
So actually, in a lot of ways, the people don't realize there's an obligation you and I have to each other, not just as staff members, but as people doing life together.
Yeah.
If I'm unhealthy, I'm not helping you
yeah.
and blessing you. And you need my perspective, we need each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating for me, you talking about homelessness, and actually the core problem there is the lack of relationship. And you know, one of the areas that Anwen and I are responsible for at Bridgeway is home. You know, marriage is at the core of that. And how are we building authentic vulnerability within marriage? You know, how much are we creating that opportunity for relationship? And I think the great thing for those of us who are believers is we get to go to our Savior and to depend on Him to help us. So I don't always see Anwen's perspective. And when we're opposite ends of personality types and all of those kind of things, but one of the things I can do is I can go to the Father and I can say, Father, how do you see her? What are you seeing right now? And because sometimes I see her through my lenses and actually that isn't who she is. The Father sees her differently to me. So, but me talking to the Father and he lets me in, no, this is how I see my daughter, helps me go, oh, okay, I need to let some of these ways in which I've projected onto you who you are, I need to let some of those things drop.
Mm-hmm.
And so marriage, right at the heart of that, again, it's a relational issue. This whole question about how can we be rigorously authentic? How can we step towards vulnerability and allow another person intimacy? I've heard that phrase, into me see.
Mm-hmm.
How do we begin to let those walls down? How do we begin to let those guards down? Take our fig leaves off, stop pretending, come out. Practically, give me practical. What do we do?
I think we have to first admit we don't know how. Right? I think so. Brandon Vincent stood up on stage, and I love that he stuck to his system. He was not at an AA meeting. He was at church. But he said, "Hello, my name is Brandon Vincent. I'm an alcoholic." And I don't think he did that. I think he did that because that's how the system works for him. Mm-hmm. For him to speak truth that he wanted to speak about alcohol, it needed to come after him admitting that he's weak.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
So there's this thing of admitting that we don't know how,
yeah.
that we really aren't good at. Mm-hmm. I talked a little bit about this at the men's camp out. And there's this idea. So for instance, I recently, and I hate that it's more recent, I wish it had been earlier, but I'll accept it because it's now, have decided to really purposefully lead my home. That's a newer thing for me. I was trying to lead my home poorly by being passive and all the bits that I was doing, but I've very intentionally and purposely decided to lead my home more recently. But I got to be honest, I don't really know how. Mm-hmm. If I knew how, it wouldn't have taken me 12 to 14 years to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And actually, I didn't figure it out. My community said, "Hey, Helms, mm-hmm. I see a gap in your life right now, and one of the things is you aren't leading your home well." And so I've learned to do something. It was a straight Holy Spirit thing, but there's a fruit in it that I can't deny, which is when I get in a bind with that and I recognize that I'm going back to like an old model.
Yeah.
We have to pay attention to who we used to be too. Not living in the past. I don't like rearview mirror living. But I have to remember like, okay, in the past when I would try to lead, I would raise my voice and talk really fast because that's just what I would do because I was trying to assert myself. But the difference now that's really interesting that I'm practicing, and I'm still young at this, is I'll recognize that start to come back up. And I'll just tell myself, but I'm also telling the Lord, okay, you're the leader of this home. How do I? And so I just ask the Lord, "Father, you said I'm a leader. How do I lead?" And He will answer that prayer every time. Yeah. And what I love about that, I didn't realize it until I'd done it a couple of times, is when I ask that question, calling myself the thing He calls me, I own it. In weakness, mind you, because I'm asking for help. But then when He answers it, He cements it by calling me that and then telling me how to be it.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed is the graces began to flow in that space, and I've become more and more and more to the point that even just this morning, my wife and I were having kind of a side conversation, and she said, "The reason I'm doing X, Y, Z is because you've led me. It never occurred to me that I couldn't." Not because of control, but because of... And we have a question probably about this topic.
I'll tell you what I love about what you just said. You're describing the life of a disciple there. The life of the disciple is I've learned everything. I now know what to do. The life of a disciple is live like Jesus. How did Jesus live? He actually came vulnerable. That's how He entered the world.
Right.
This is His pattern. And His pattern was He only did what He saw the Father do. You and I have talked about this. You helped me with this, with my marriage. In a situation, Andy, ask the question, "Father, what are you doing?" In other words, admit, "I don't know what to do right now."
Yes.
Stop trying to fix it yourself. Stop trying to blast your way through. You know, "Father, what are you saying? How do I respond to that?" BB, we got a question.
We do. I know we just have a few minutes left, but I think this would be good from a couple comments we got about giving kind of a quick definition of vulnerability versus honesty or transparency, so that we're kind of setting the stage up for what we're actually saying that vulnerability is this week.
That's good. So honestly, I think vulnerability is different from transparency in the intent of your heart. We'll do things out of transparency that actually allows us to remain in control. Transparency is, I'll show you what I want to show you, but I won't be authentic. And so authenticity and vulnerability are actually really married, I believe. And what happens with vulnerability is I trust you. There's an element of trust. Transparency actually still holds on to control. Mm. And that really matters. Because what happens is those things might look similar, but they will diverge quickly and they will diverge pretty violently.
That's really good.
And so I think that's really important for us to know. Honesty is a word that just can flop on both ends of that.
I've heard the term selective vulnerability. Because here's the thing in our culture at the moment, vulnerability is a buzz word. Mm. You know, you have Brené Brown out there.
Yeah.
I was thinking about the show, The Greatest Showman. People love that bit of, "This is me," you know, that there's a cry from our culture of vulnerability. And so people are playing this. They're saying, let me show you something that's vulnerable in me in order to win your affection. Ooh, dear. Yeah. The heart's gone wrong there. Authentic vulnerability is, this actually is me.
Yeah. An authentic vulnerability is accepting the risk.
Yes.
Of being completely vulnerable.
And as he goes on to say, yeah, surrendering all the outcomes,
yes,
all of those things. I mean, I'm really excited we're having this conversation.
It's a great week.
I want it. Was that it for questions?
Yes, it's that one. We have a couple announcements at the end.
Yeah, I love that we're having this conversation because I want to do real church. It feels to mm-hmm. me like this is what Jesus was involved in,
yes,
when he was talking about, okay, let's make disciples.
Yeah.
Let's be real about where we are. Mm-hmm. So actually we can make a concrete plan with the Father of how do we move on from here into the life you're calling us into. Yeah. So
that's awesome.
Bebe, you have some announcements?
I do. We want to do a quick announcement because we have a really great event coming up. And so I'm going to look at them, not you.
Awesome.
Next week in 10 days, which is crazy to think about, but in 10 days is our annual table gathering. So this is our annual event that we do here at Bridgeway. And it's a great, like, inviting people back into the home, especially for Coach and Joe viewers and other people who watch online. So if you're watching and you don't know about this yet, next week, October 8th through 10th, is our table gathering. And you can register for an on-campus ticket or an online ticket. You need one either way, whether you're going to be here virtually or with us in person. But the conversations are all going to be around racial reconciliation. We have two great guys, Will Ford and Matt Lockett, who are coming in and who have made this their life's mission to talk about and minister to people over racial reconciliation. So we're really excited, but it's coming up in the next 10 days. So we really want to make sure you guys have that invitation as well. And we hope to see you there.
Awesome. So, thank you for joining us today. And this week, this is something we're focusing on.
Yep.
Thinking through vulnerability, various different guests talking through, okay, how does this work? And mm-hmm. we bless you. Helms, why don't you just bless those listening to this to step into the invitation that's in front of them today.
Okay. I bless everyone with an earshot of this message, whether now or recorded, with the ability to literally trust truth, to trust the truth giver, to lean into him and to take a risk, knowing that he is good, right, and perfect. Go in peace.
Thanks for joining us on Coach and Joe, a YouTube talk show and podcast that helps you walk in genuine friendship with God. Check out coachandjoe.com for epic merch, weekly blogs, and ways to help keep us up and running. We'll see you next time on Coach and Joe.